first part in our To the Ends of the Earth documentary series on the Irish military diaspora in South America focuses on the life of Ambrose O'Higgins and how a boy born in County Sligo attained one of the highest political positions in 18th century South America. This documentary and all the documentaries in this series reflect the Irish experience in both the European and the international context. They are tales of daring and intrigue on the high seas and new frontiers, and explain how changes to the political landscape here in Ireland helped shape the world right to the end of the earth. Ambrose O'Higgins was born in 1720. These were turbulent times here in Ireland. Dr. James O'Higgins Norman gives us the background to the O'Higgins family and Ambrose's early life.
The O'Higgins family were a Sligo family who were based in an area on Loch Arrow near Boyle in County Sligo, and the area was known as Ballinarry, is still known as Ballinarry. And then when Cromwell's forces came in the 1650s into Sligo, they literally wiped the O'Higginses, along with some other families, out of existence in Sligo, because those families and the O'Higginses had remained faithful to the Gaelic Catholic ways. And so there were O'Higginses living at Monteague, Ballinarry, Horn, and a couple of other places around County Sligo. And literally from 1654 onwards, where prior to that, their name was on all the deeds, and you see it on all the land was owned by a huge amount of land owned by the O'Higginses. From 1654 onwards, it's just wiped out. And we know that the immediate generation that lost their land remained on in the area, but now as tenants on land that had been given over to Cromwellian soldiers. So in 1721, the family migrated to Dangan in Summerhill in County Meath, where a relation had been made parish priest, and he obviously was able to negotiate some kind of a place for them working on the local estates, Lord Langford's estate, I think specifically in County Meath. So Ambrose was born, we think, in 1720 in Ballinarry, but by 1721 the family were definitely in Summerhill in County Meath. So he was only ever in Sligo for a year maybe. And then the family remained in Summerhill from 1721, and the graves, two graves are still there with their names on the headstones, up until the last O'Higgins of the name O'Higgins was Bridget O'Higgins, who died in 1947. There are people who are related still in the area there through the female line who don't carry the O'Higgins name, but the last O'Higgins named person died in 1947. So they were there from 1721 to 1947. Charles and Margaret were Ambrose's parents, and they were the first to move to Summerhill in County Meath. And once they got there, they were tenant farmers. And we know that Ambrose somehow got some kind of an education, because in his 40s he was able to take a position in the Spanish colonial service and eventually end up in South America. And he had to be fairly educated in those times to do that. So even though the family that moved to Summerhill were poor tenant farmers, they obviously still had connections with relations in Europe, specifically in Spain, and had found positions down there.
O'Higgins set out for Spain in or about 1751 and worked for the Butler Trading House in Cadiz. There is conflicting theories about how and why Ambrose O'Higgins first went to South America. Author and member of the O'Higgins Institute in Santiago de Chile, Sergio Martín Baez, through interpreter Rodrigo Pardo, elaborates.
There's two theories. Ambrosio Higgins went to Cadiz to the uncles. He was in the commerce, 1756. He made a trip to Buenos Aires, and from there to Lima. Ambrosio was in marketing and sent clothes and stuff. But it's another theory that his father sent to Ambrose to look for his brother William. He came to be a priest in Paraguay, and Ambrosio came to Paraguay. William, wait, he left and he got married in Paraguay.
Ambrose's business interests in Peru failed, and there is some speculation that in his early days in South America, Ambrose came into contact with the Spanish Inquisition. This was not unusual in the new territories, And as we shall see in our documentary on Admiral William Brown, non-Spanish enterprise was targeted for ruination. Sergio Martín Báez relates an incident which appears in the writings of Peruvian author Ricardo Palma, which may lend some credence to this assertion.
Ambrosio was friend of this Spanish guy. They were in jail. Ricardo Palma told that in this book. And they went free, the two Ambrosios. They were drinking here in a bar. Well, he decided the Spanish go back to Spain, and Ambrosio decided to stay in America. And they make a toast for, I hope one day you, Ambrosio, came to be a viceroy of Peru. And they toast also for the Spanish guy became a bishop. And he came to what they decided to be. He was a bishop. Ambrosio came to be a viceroy of Peru.
As an Irish Catholic, Ambrose O'Higgins qualified to work in South America as part of the Spanish forces, who were engaged in expanding their empire throughout the Southern Hemisphere. The Andes are beautiful, but treacherous in winter. Ambrose O'Higgins set about the monumental task of establishing a postal route from Mendoza in Argentina right through the Andes into Chile. Dr. James O'Higgins Norman describes how this worked.
Well, we know that Ambrose went to South America. He was invited down there to assist on a trip down in the colonial service. But he noticed that in the winter, the postal service ended because they couldn't get posts across the mountains from Argentina over to Peru and to Chile. So he set up a system of huts that were stocked with supplies. And it meant that the people carrying the post could go as far as the next hut, stay there a while until the weather permitted, and they go to the next hut again and eventually make it through the mountains in the winter. And it kept the postal service going. So he made a name for himself as being kind of somebody who was quite inventive and enterprising, and came to the attention of his superiors.
The mission was a resounding success and facilitated year-round communication with Chile for the first time. This was of great advantage to the Spanish forces. And as Sergio Martín Báez explains, it didn't do O'Higgins' career any harm either.
Ambrosio came to Chile and became a military engineer. They made fortresses in Valdivia. They built many fortresses in the south. And they built shelters in the Andes. Then he came back to Spain. And they show all the maps. To the Minister of the Crown, they show all the plans, all the work he did here.
Eso hace que lo manden de vuelta.
They send him back again.
Para que siga en ese trabajo en América.
To keep working.
En Concepción,
and here, in Concepción, south of Chile. And Ambrose get the Concepción administrator job.
Sergio Martín Báez gives some insight into Ambrose's personal life.
Él tiene que venir a...
He has to come to Santiago. In these trips to Santiago, they go to Chillán and meet Isabel's father, Simón Riquelme. And Ambrose was with Isabel and Bernardo was born. But Ambrosio is more important for him, his career, than a family and the military and the government and all this. And he didn't recognize his child, Bernardo.
El niño se llama Bernardo Riquelme, lleva el apellido de la mamá.
And they named Bernardo Riquelme.
Following is an extract from a letter of February the 20th, 1811. Sent by Juan McKenna to Ambrose's son, Bernardo Higgins, regarding his father's outlook on life.
The life of your father, faithfully related, presents one of the most beautiful moral lessons in the history of humanity. I do not know of any better way of imposing upon young spirits the inestimable value of unbending honour and of indefatigable diligence and unmoving firmness.
In fairness, honour is not how one would describe 57-year-old Ambrose's treatment of 16-year-old Isabella. However, while he didn't have a relationship with his son Bernardo, he did provide for him to some degree.
He's acted like an absent father. He sent it to the school and here in Chile and then in Lima and then in Spain and in England. Well, he wants that Bernardo came to the army, in the Royal Army, but he has to be, you know, a legitimate son. So he can't get that one. So they send him to England to start with the marketing business study.
O'Higgins' career gathered pace, but again, theories abound. This time concerning Ambrose O'Higgins' right to claim nobility. Sergio Martín Baez relates a theory prevalent in Chile's historical circles.
Ha hecho una muy buena labor a favor de la corona española,
Don Ambrosio. So Don Ambrosio make a great job with the crown.
Le puede dar el título, la corona. ¿Qué le da?
Ambrosio demand
una
a noble the title.
Tiene una gente.
He knows some people in Cádiz.
Esa gente contrata a un rey de armas.
These people hire
Montesquieu.
Montesquieu.
Para que le invente una genealogía.
This Montesquieu fellow invented a link to get this title.
Con los barones de Vallenari,
with the
que son Oji.
Baron of Vallenaris, with the O'Higgins.
Los barones de Vallenari existían en Irlanda, entonces él no podía ser barón de Vallenari irlandés.
And there's also Vallenaris in Ireland.
Ahí existen los
but in Spanish there's another. Claro. So he had the title from Spain.
Español, no es el título irlandés.
It's not Irish, it's
confusión.
Spanish.
Nos está usurpando un título irlandés.
Both are Spanish, the Baron de Vallenaris and Marchis of Osorno, this city in Chile.
Dr. James O'Higgins Norman dispels this notion.
In those days, you could only be promoted in the Spanish colonial service if you were a Catholic and of noble birth. So he had to get papers from Ireland to confirm that he was descended from the O'Higgins family of Ballinari, who were a noble family in Ireland. And he got those papers from the King of Arms in Dublin, who was actually a British administrator, but had no problem writing up papers and sending them to Spain to confirm Ambrose's background and his birth. And then after that, he just went up and up through the Spanish colonial service until he eventually became the Viceroy of Peru and including Chile.
Dr. James O'Higgins Norman explains how rumours relating to O'Higgins' nobility might have come about.
But there was also a little bit of jealousy. Some of the O'Connors were not impressed with the advancement of the O'Higginses down there, particularly Ambrose, and did try and bring into question his background in Ireland and make out that he had come from a very poor family, which he did. His family became impoverished after 1654, but they tried to make out that his claims to a noble lineage and whatever under Gaelic Ireland didn't exist. They retracted that later on. The particular man who had put that rumour about, but the rumour remained and always cast a doubt over Ambrose's his pedigree, I suppose. But anyone who needs to have that confirmed just needs to go to the archive of the Indies in Spain, where you'll see the records are there that show the O'Higgins family lived in Ballinari and were established there as a noble family for 700 years up to the 1650s. And he had no problem acquiring a patent of nobility from the British administration in Dublin and having that recognised by the King of Arms in Spain.
Indeed, I have seen copies of certificates in Peru that would suggest that Ambrose's Irish lineage did entitle him to claim noble status, and his Spanish services records of 1787 state
his homeland, Ireland, his status, noble, his health, moderate.
As with other strands of his life, Ambrose O'Higgins' relationship with the indigenous population of Chile was complex. Some might even claim it duplicitous. The Spanish ruled invaded territories with an iron fist and had relative success in securing lands inhabited by Pinuche and Mapuche peoples, to name but a few. But it was during the Huiluche Rebellion of 1792 and the treaties that followed that O'Higgins really showed his strengths. Colonial interests ordered that O'Higgins develop access between Spanish settlements at Maulin and Valdivia. The only way to do this was by running a passage through Huiluche territory. This spread disquiet among the indigenous population of the Osorno region, who, up till then, had had a good relationship with the governor of Valdivia, Mariano Pastrana. The Huiluche partitioned Pastrana to intervene on their behalf to stop development through their lands. But he was powerless to do anything in relation to this issue. Faced with a threat of full-scale invasion and takeover by Spanish forces, Huiluche chiefs had little option but to sign the Treaty of Rio Bueno in February 1789. This accord brought a halt to any likelihood of a Huiluche invasion of Chiloé and afforded the Huiluche people support against raids by other clans. It also facilitated the Spanish development of the abandoned city of Osorno and allowed for Spanish settlement north of the Bueno River. A high influx of Spanish settlers brought about a change of heart among some indigenous chiefs, and incursions and raids into the new Spanish settlements and missions ensued. Colonial authorities feared invasion of their stronghold of Valdivia, and under the direction of O'Higgins, Captain Tomas de Figueroa dealt with the issue by burning Huiluche homes and crops and detaining Huiluche males. A new treaty in 1793 was signed, this time allowing Spanish haciendas both north and south of the Bueno River. Also in 1793, a parliament was held in Negreta and a treaty affirming the King of Spain as sovereign of the Araucania region, while reserving it for the Mapuche people, was passed. Treaty celebrations, consisting of banquets of meat and wine lasting 3 days, were held for all concerned, including many indigenous chiefs, all at a huge cost to the Chilean exchequer. Further to his credit, Ambrose O'Higgins was responsible for abolishing the encomienda system. This was an appalling practice which forced native people to work the land for the benefit of the crown. Ambrose managed to win the confidence of native chiefs. Dr. James O'Higgins Norman explains.
He also, when he was viceroy, negotiated treaties with the Native Americans, and in fact they wouldn't hold a parliament of their own people without him being present. And I often wonder if his experience of his own family's history in Ireland under English rule influenced how he, as a colonial officer, would have treated the Native Americans in South America. I think it probably did, because they certainly seem to have held him in high regard.
At all times, O'Higgins acted in the interest of Spain, and this brought about mistrust in some quarters. The assassination of the Pinuche leader, Li Bian, is a case in point. Li Bian was a highly regarded chief and leader of his people. He was named Distinguished Soldier of the Spanish Army for the part played by him in peace negotiations following the Mapuche uprising in 1774. In 1776, Li Bian travelled to the Chilean city of Los Angeles for a meeting with O'Higgins. On his return, he was attacked and murdered by a group of Spaniards. It was rumoured that the assassination was planned by O'Higgins. Ambrose denied any part in the incident and, true to his form, pursued those responsible and hanged one of the perpetrators. Given his reaction, it is highly unlikely that O'Higgins sanctioned the murder, but it showed that some held misgivings. There was also suspicion among some of his Spanish counterparts that Ambrose was planning to colonise Osorno and the surrounding area with Irish settlers. I put the credibility of such a notion to Dr. James O'Higgins Norman.
take Ambrose as an example. First of all, he was invited down by a family member to get involved in South America and the colonial service. And then he brought brothers and nephews with him. And so that's just one family. The O'Higginses were just one Irish family who were kind of making their way through the professional, true professional life in South America. There were the McKennas, there were the Browns, there were all their families, as you well know, and they all were bringing their families down with them. So I suppose, too, the boys back in Spain, it must have looked like a bit of an Irish takeover, but it was a big continent with a lot of work to be done, and there was plenty of work for a lot of these people.
Ambrose O'Higgins was appointed Viceroy of Peru in 1796. As such, he was responsible for a vast area that now covers present-day Peru, Chile, Bolivia, northwest Argentina and parts of western Brazil. Despite being 75 years of age, he took to his post with vigour. Claudia Mariela Alvarez Chavez of the extremely popular and somewhat lively Casa O'Higgins Museum in Lima, Peru explains.
Ambrosio O'Higgins, the viceroy, number 13-6. Ambrosio O'Higgins built the tower in the principal church in the Plaza Mayor, in the main square here in Lima. He built the similar muralla front the Rimac River and the Plaza de Hacho, the Bulls, Plaza de Toros. Ambrosio died here and sus restos in the San Pedro Church in Lima.
In addition, as Viceroy of Peru, O'Higgins set about strengthening Peru's defence and fortifications, building roads and improving communications. So what was Ambrose's view of his son Bernardo as he grew into manhood?
A fellow called De La Cruz told him to kick out Bernardo. Ambrosio was very upset because Bernardo was a revolutionary, making a real problem in Spain. He died very angry.
What does Sergio Martín Baez think Ambrose O'Higgins' legacy was?
They leave a fortune to Bernardo Riquelme, a whole farm and lands, cows, horses. Bernardo get the O'Higgins, the last name. He thinks he was like the cornerstone of the crown and make a lot of achievement in the military issues. And he was considered also for his labor in society, a lot of things, and all under the Spanish crown.
And what does Dr. James O'Higgins Norman believe Ambrose O'Higgins' legacy to be?
One of the things that he was kind of famed for was the rebuilding of the city of Osorno. I think in the 1790s it was finished. Now, he commissioned Juan McKenna to oversee that in terms of the practical operations of rebuilding that city. And he did such an amazing job and such an impressive job that the King of Spain actually gave him a second title and made him the Marquis of Osorno. And the city of Osorno to this day uses the O'Higgins coat of arms as their emblem for that city. I think Ambrose O'Higgins was a quintessential public servant, as many of the O'Higgins family were before him and after him. So when he was in South America, he was a dedicated public servant, so much so that he sacrificed family life and a relationship with his son and a relationship with the mother of his son in order to maintain his position and to maintain his career, and you might say somewhat selfishly even to ensure success for himself. But he worked, evidence is there from the documents, the manuscripts, he worked day and night as a public servant for the betterment of the area he was in charge of, and was able to negotiate very successfully with the Native Americans, with the local nobility, with the Spanish colonial administrators and business people in South America. And Chile and Peru prospered under him when he was the senior administrator in that area. I think of Ambrose O'Higgins has a legacy in Chile, There are two aspects to it. One is that he introduced and enhanced the public service and the communication systems in that part of South America, and the road networks to this day and the cities that are there to this day, many of them can owe their existence to him rebuilding them and enhancing them during his time as the senior colonial administrator down there. And then the second legacy is probably maybe more important and more accidental maybe, and that's through his son Bernardo, who was the founding father of the modern Chilean state. And I think that it's kind of ironic that Ambrose, having been a senior official in the Spanish colonial service, a representative of the King of Spain, decorated twice at least by the King of Spain in his time, in his lifetime, his son was the face and the icon of Chilean independence and republicanism and nationalism, and that's another legacy he certainly left behind, but I think it was probably more accidental and unintended.
As always with Ambrose, there are two theories in relation to his legacy. Claudia Mariela Alvarez Chavez explains.
There are an information about that it's possible Ambrosio have a child, Clement Marcan. He reports these information about the adult here in Peru.
Indeed, in the introduction to his book, The Incas of Peru, written in the mid-1800s, Sir Clements Markham states,
I got to know Lima very well and made some friends, including the beautiful Grimenessa Altos, to whom I was afterwards much indebted in my researches, and the aged Senora O'Higgins, daughter of the Spanish Viceroy of Peru from 1796 to 1801.
After a short illness, Ambrose O'Higgins died suddenly on the 19th of March 1801 at Lima, Peru, aged 81 years. In next week's programme, we stay in Chile when we look at the life of Monaghan-born John McKenna, protégé of Ambrose O'Higgins, mentor to his son Bernardo, and one of the liberators of the Chilean nation. We would like to thank everybody who made this documentary possible. Quotes were read by Declan Cahill and Adrian Cahaney.
Today's programme is produced by Enda M. Roach for Near FM. The To the End of the Earth documentary series is supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Fund.